Hello and welcome to the Resistance Rewind, a podcast that rewinds and reviews films from the past but keeps its feet firmly planted in the current events of today. I am your host, Chad Franks, and joining me today is James Rowland. How you doing, James?
I am doing good, man. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. It's good to have you. So, James is a screenwriter and a producer. You also might know him from one of our other Overthink podcasts, Close Up, where they dive really deep into an artist's work. It's a great podcast. I can't recommend it enough. And it really focuses, like I said, as somebody like me who's a fan of movies, it really just teaches me more and really brings a lot of depth to movies that I didn't even realize before. So, but thank you so much, James, for joining the Resistance. I really appreciate it.
Dude, and thanks for having me on for this episode. When I saw this on the list, this was the one I had to be a part of.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. So we'll spoil it a little bit for you guys listening here too. Yeah. We're going to be talking about Jurassic Park today. In this podcast, we've talked about immigration, xenophobia, racism, but we're going to be changing up a little bit here. This one's going to be a lot more interesting. We're going to get into some theoretical physics and cloning and some pretty interesting stuff. And it's stuff that maybe not everybody doesn't have their, when they think about like maybe politics or the current social scene going on right now in our culture, maybe they're not thinking about this, but I think this is really relevant stuff. And there's a lot that you brought to my attention, James. I'm really excited to dive deep with you on this one.
Totally.
Awesome. So just a reminder for everyone out there, what we do here at the Resistance Rewind, we review older movies, like I said, Jurassic Park, that are no longer in theaters, and we discuss their relevancy or irrelevance or lack thereof in today's social climate. So we're here to resist the notion that movies are just mere entertainment. You know, we agree that movies can be a starting point for great conversations, great inspiration, and great change. And in this case, I think my mind might be changed a lot on the subject of cloning and genes and stuff. This is really great. This has been a lot of I have an opinion on everything, James. Like, you can probably throw something out there, and I am pro or against it. But like, this was one I'm like, man, I really don't know much about like how I feel about it. So a lot of, for me anyway, I don't know about you, but a lot of my emotions are going to be, and opinions are going to be very raw, which is new for me, you know?
So this will
be really fun.
So. I'm curious, were you like generally against, or were you generally for, and like where did you start and where did you shift?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say for me, I think I was generally for it, I guess. I was generally for it, you know, I would have to say. And then the more I grow with not only Jurassic Park as a film, because it's a gift that keeps on giving, and more every time I watch it. And this, no joke, I just rewatched it again before watching it. That might be like the 50th time I've seen this movie, like maybe plus. But it just, every time I watch it, I see something new. And I think it's really kind of turning my opinion. Yeah. But I also don't want to be that guy, James, that's anti-science. You know what I mean?
It's interesting because I've gotten the opposite where in my research and stuff and my take on Jurassic Park as well, which I used to consider kind of an anti-science movie, like those old 1950s radiation scare movies. You're going to make giant ants and they're going to kill all of us. I've gone from that to being cautiously optimistic.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, that's positive.
Yeah. But then, anyway, we'll get into that later. But
that's awesome. No, that's really great. I think I'm slowly being like, just because we can doesn't mean we should kind of a thing. That's kind of where I'm leaning right now. But hey, that's just me. So we'll see where that goes. So let's go ahead and we'll get into like a little bit of the, background. It's weird because we've talked about Gangs of New York on this podcast. We talked about Children of Men on this podcast. And I think most people, maybe especially Children of Men, maybe don't know about this one, but I don't know anybody that doesn't know about Jurassic Park. So we'll go ahead and, this movie came out in 1990. So for those of you who don't know, this movie came out in 1993. There's this unknown director, Steven Spielberg. I don't know if you've heard about him, James. He's done some good stuff.
Yes, one or two things.
Yeah, one or two. Diesel, I think. Everyone knows him from Diesel, I think. Yeah. And so he directed this film. I'll give you a little synopsis here. I love the synopsis, by the way, on IMDb, because this is not how I would describe the film, but this is pretty good. So during a preview tour, a theme park suffers a major power breakdown that allows its clone dinosaur exhibits to run amok. So
it's so accurate.
It is. Yeah, it's very accurate. This movie stars Jeff Goldblum, Laura Dern, Sam Neill, and Samuel L. Jackson, hold on to your butts. Now, I've seen this movie a million times, and every time I watch it, I don't know why it's like, I feel like I always forget Sam Jackson's in this movie. I don't know why.
He wasn't the cultural touchstone that he is now when it came out. It's interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have the same thing where I'm like, that's right. And he's really good. But yeah,
he's very good, and he doesn't look like Sam Jackson to me. I think maybe that's part of it.
Too, yeah, and he's playing a more reserved, less gregarious. Now he plays all these fast talking characters, and he's a man of few words in this movie.
That's very true. That's very true. And I think that's why. Yeah, I love the performance too. He's great. So, but yeah, so that's best. That's the movie that we're talking about here. There's so much for this movie to offer. I honestly believe. And we can dive into this too, like at the end when we swim around in the shallow and when we talk about maybe the good and the bad things about this film. But I really think Jurassic Park is, without exaggeration, one of the greatest films of all time. I'd be curious what your thoughts on it.
No, yeah, okay, I agree. As well. I'll send you the link for the show notes, but I actually spent years mulling over an essay about it that I finally just wrote and put on my blog because I don't know who else I could have sent it to try and publish it or post it. But it's a formative movie to me, both in terms of it's the reason why I entered the film industry, but it's formative in ways that I didn't even understand in understanding my own family. And when Jurassic World was coming out, I revisited it. And that's where I came to a lot of my understandings of what the film was really about. But yeah, it's interesting because we can talk about what the film says and then the cultural aspects with what we're going through now with cloning. So there's kind of like two topics. Uh-huh. But yeah, no, it's in terms of how it treats science, I've changed my opinion on it, but like, anyway, that no, it's a far, I don't want to call it a super deep movie because it's definitely pop entertainment, but it is,
sure,
it is far more resonant than people realize. I think that plays a part. Yeah. 12-year-old boys love dinosaurs and 12-year-old girls love dinosaurs. There's that aspect for sure. But there's a lot going on underneath it that I think is very primal that people kind of react to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I think you're so right. I think the reason why I think the movie is like, again, one of the best films of all time, I think it's because it comes at you as like the summer blockbuster. And like you said, it's dinosaurs. Yeah. And there haven't been any good dinosaur movies out there. So it really stands alone. The special effects, I mean, I watched it yesterday and it still looks better than like, it looks better to me than Avatar. I mean, I
agree.
You know what I mean? It's just like, yeah. And so for me, yeah, it's incredible. But to watch that, every time I watch it, I learn something new. And I think it's really cool because it kind of subversively puts some of these ideas into your mind. And watching it this time, especially considering the topics that we're going to cover, I'm like, oh man, this is really deep philosophical stuff. And it makes me want to read the book. I don't know if you read the book, but I bet you the book really tackles with a lot of these subjects, I would imagine. So
the book is much colder and much more about the science.
Yeah.
Whereas the movie takes all of that and tells a story about learning to evolve and kind of learning to evolve as a family and as a human being to survive, and parallels that with like physical evolution. And the book is much more science is dangerous. Cause Michael Crichton, was a very intelligent guy, very savvy, you know, had training as a doctor, as a medical doctor and stuff. I don't know if he ever became a doctor, but he went to medical school. But later on, especially later on in his life, he got very, like, he was a climate change, I think he was a climate change denier or a climate change skeptic, and got a little bit into conspiracy theories. And so he mistrusted science, even though he loved it. It's interesting. The book is much more that than the movie's a lot more hopeful in a lot of ways. Even though they learn a lesson in the movie, there's still kind of a hope to the end of it. Yeah.
Well, then him and I get along because I completely deny any climate change, even though it's mid-October. No, it's late October in Southern California right now. And I could go swimming right now.
We're gonna have they're calling for 107 degree weather in Woodland Hills on Tuesday.
Yeah, I heard that too.
And it's gonna break records. Yeah,
no, that's coincidence though. There's no science to that.
We're getting ravaged by fires while the rest of the country is getting ravaged by hurricanes. And there's a hurricane in Ireland with over 100 degree weather, 100 mile an hour winds.
Awesome. You know what though?
Things are totally normal.
Now, you know what though? I don't mean to change the subject because those things sound really important, but I need to know because the president and I both want to know, do you stand when the national anthem's on? Because that's really what we need to cover instead of covering
every ball game that I watch at home, I stand up in my underwear and we just lost like how many people just turned off the podcast.
That's okay. No, that's okay. That's all right though. No, but we need to tackle those issues because that's what I need to know before we really. I don't care what you think about anything else, this cloning and stuff. Yeah. I don't care about any of those ethics. I need to know really the deep seated issues. You know what I mean?
The deep seated issues about whether you stood or kneeled.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's important. So now that we have that out of the way, though, but yeah. So what I one of the reasons why I'm really glad to have you on here. You told me that you've been doing research for a TV show. You're going to be writing for a potential TV show. Is that correct?
Yeah. it's something I'm just writing on my own. It's not, but yeah, it's, yeah, I became kind of obsessed with it because I had the idea and I had absolutely nothing to do, nothing. I didn't know anything about cloning or anything about anything really. So, I love science, but I'm not very well versed in it.
Sure.
So I reached out to the, oh gosh, I'll link to the show notes. I'm going to mess up the name. I think it's the Entertainment and Science Exchange, but they basically just help artists, writers hook up with scientists that want to talk about science to help have more accurate science in storytelling, usually, movies and television.
Yeah.
And, I got to talk to quite a few for this story, but the one I got to email with a little bit was Beth Shapiro, and she wrote a book called How to Clone a Woolly Mammoth.
Wow.
And we could get into that too, because it actually is impossible to clone a dinosaur. They gloss over that part. I mean, that was the brilliant part of Jurassic Park, was the idea where he came up with the idea of finding DNA in insects that had been embedded in amber, which they now know doesn't work because we've looked at these insects and it's not there. But, but that's the question. DNA doesn't last that long. It has like a half life of, I can't remember, like 100,000 years. And she said longer, if it's frozen, you can find, intact DNA sequences. So,
wow. So
in terms of cloning ancient animals, you're only going to find anything where the organic material is intact enough. And with, I'm sure people know this, but like dinosaur bones that you see are not actual dinosaur bones. They, all the organic minerals, all the organic components have been leached out and replaced with minerals. And so they've turned to rock. So that's why there's no DNA. So like, that's the hurdle. If you could find intact DNA, but there's just no way.
I think that was very, I'm trying to think of the word for you. That's you think very well of people to say that most people don't know that. most people do know that is what you said, because I think that is entirely untrue. I think I learned a big lesson in college. I was sitting next to a gentleman and we're in a biology class, and the teacher's talking about dinosaurs or just like very passively, I forgot what they even brought up, fossils. And this guy leans over to me next to me, and I've been sitting next to him for 2 weeks. I barely know him. He leans over to me and says, dinosaurs aren't real though, right?
What?
And I thought he was joking. Yeah. I thought he was joking. He's like, no. Wow. I mean, dinosaurs aren't real. Yeah. They're made up. And so whatever she's saying, just don't believe it. And I was like, well, what are you taking? Yeah. And I was just like, so I would say there are those people out there.
Yeah.
I think he probably thinks the earth is flat too. So.
Oh, that's true. Well, that's interesting. Yeah. I went to a religious university. I didn't go where Ben went. I went where Jason went, Jason Helms.
Okay,
and so there weren't, I don't think anybody there, everybody there believed in dinosaurs. They just thought that they existed when humans did and were wiped out by the flood, but they at least believe they existed.
What I was saying. This guy took it even farther. So when you say that, like, oh, most people know that those aren't really the bones, I'm like, I don't know about that, man. I would have to say that, but that's very generous of you, I think, to say that. But incredible. Yeah, exactly. Now they know. Thanks to you, now they know. I think is so incredible. Yeah, that's what I think is incredible about this. But you're doing this research for the script that you're writing.
Yeah.
And so when you're doing this research, my question is, and some of this you shared with me, is Jurassic Park far-fetched, or is this something that maybe for those of us who don't know, are we a little closer than we might think?
We are a lot closer than we think in terms of Ice Age animals. And I actually I haven't been able to get a straight answer from anybody in regards to giant sloths and saber-toothed tigers, because they were adapted to warmer weather. And the real trick to finding, so the holy grail of cloning is the full genome sequence, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have that, or at least incredibly intact. I think there's small holes in it for the woolly mammoth, because we could find those frozen in the Arctic, and we actually have them for Neanderthals, which is incredible, or at least mostly intact, to the point that they have actually been able to find out that we didn't kill off Neanderthals like we thought. We actually bred them out, because humans have Neanderthal DNA in them, and actually far more than they originally thought. And they actually, I was just looking at an article before we started this podcast, and haven't had time to finish it, but that Neanderthal DNA in us actually affects the way that we react to the sun and stuff. So like, Neanderthal DNA has affected human evolution drastically, which is incredible.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And in fact, if I read it correctly, the only humans that don't on Earth are with a direct lineage to Africa, because it would have been the European hominids that absorbed that bred out the Neanderthal DNA. Sorry, that's a little bit of a sidetrack. So in theory, we could start actively trying to clone Neanderthals now.
Wow. Wow.
And Woolly Mammoth were right on the verge. And this would kind of get into the movie a little bit, you know, there's a little bit less so with Woolly Mammoths, but definitely with Neanderthals, a huge, huge ethical questions. Neanderthals had tools. Mm-hmm. They had music. They were close enough genetically that we could breed with them and produce viable offspring, right? That means that, like, what is it? Like a donkey and a horse creates a mule and a mule is sterile. So the line stops.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we're not talking about that. We're talking about, you know, DNA that is more viable than a donkey and a horse, which look like practically the same thing. So we're like, that's how closely related we are to them. And yet we're not. I mean, they were not human. It was a different DNA genome. So anyway, all that to say, that is a huge ethical question, because you'd have to find a human woman willing to carry it to term. You have to have countless miscarriages and things to, which is a question, right? Because it's like, that's a living thing that had a soul. And the question of, like, you're creating, it's different when you're cloning a sheep, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Like it'd be different cloning. I mean, even cloning an elephant, which is one of the most emotional, if any animal on this planet has a soul besides a human, it is most likely going to be an mm-hmm. elephant. They bury their dead. They show these complicated emotions. And yet we wouldn't really think too much about cloning an elephant, which is essentially what you'd be doing with a mammoth. But a Neanderthal, man, you're not cloning a human, but you are bringing back a living thing that had a soul.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
and that's godlike. I mean, it's a godlike power, lowercase g, not trying to offend anybody.
Yeah. No, it's okay. No. I think that, and that's what I love about this film. Like, I really want to say, I haven't been tackling it as much until recently about what this film was like trying to tell me. And when humans play God, it's problematic, I think, to say the least, only because here's the thing. Like, I mean, humans are so bad at, regulating themselves when it comes to just like simple technology, let alone being able, you know what I mean? Like, so to bring it back to politics of today, I mean, we have these mass shootings going on in America, and a gun is a very simple technology, and we can't even agree, you know, on how to regulate that, or even if we should or we shouldn't regulate that. And then now in the same breath, let's talk about, like you said, a human, a Homo sapien, has to bear a Neanderthal child. Like, you know, like getting into that, like how on earth, like it's going back to the analogy. It's giving a baby a loaded gun, because I don't think we're capable. So that's just me. So
I don't think we're capable or ready for anything, though. I would say this. I thought about that too. So I think the key to unlocking the movie to me is a line that everybody probably knows if they've seen it. Is when Ian Malcolm, John Hammond, played by Richard Attenborough, is talking about how the skeptic, Ian Malcolm, is not giving them enough credit, not giving the scientists enough credit for what they did. And Ian Malcolm fires back with, "Yes, John, but your scientists were too preoccupied, so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should."
Yeah, yes.
And yes, yes. And to me, that, thinking about the movie in this context, that's the key to unlocking that part of the movie, because it's not about anti-science. It's about humbleness and reason.
Absolutely.
Not just doing it to do it, but thinking about reason. And that, to me, is connecting it directly to the issue with the guns. What is the reason for mass producing and distributing a firearm that could be used in warfare?
Absolutely. No, absolutely.
To be used in warfare. It ain't a hunting rifle. It ain't personal self-protection.
Exactly.
Right. And so, like, that becomes the question of why would you do it, I think, is inherent. And also, is it something that is given to the masses? Because it is something now that we know, because, like, those gun laws were written back when we had muskets. Like, we've all heard those arguments,
sure,
right?
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they weren't adapted and changed along the way. So it is a risk. But here's also the thing, too. It's like saying that hurricane needs to stop because it's going to hurt us. All you can do is prepare for the hurricane. You can't stop it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, climate change, yes, we could, if we had made better choices, but there were still going to be hurricanes even without climate change, right?
Absolutely.
I don't mean to bring that up. So like you're not, I also think you're not going to stop technological advancement.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Gee, the lack of humility before nature that's being displayed here staggers me.
Well, thank you, Dr. Malcolm, but I think things are a little bit different than you and I had feared.
Yeah, I know. They're a lot worse.
Now, wait a second. Now, we haven't even seen the party.
Don't let him talk. There's no reason. No, I want to hear every viewpoint. I really do.
Yeah, don't you see the danger, John, inherent in what you're doing here? Genetic power is the most awesome force the planet's ever seen, but you wield it like a kid that's found his dad's gun.
It's hardly appropriate to start hurling generalizations.
If I may, I'll tell you the problem with the scientific power that you're using here. It didn't require any discipline to attain it. You know, you read what others had done, and you took the next step. You didn't earn the knowledge for yourselves, so you don't take any responsibility for it. You stood on the shoulders of geniuses to accomplish something as fast as you could, and before you even knew what you had, you patented it and packaged it and slapped it on a plastic lunchbox, and now you're selling it. You want to sell it. Well,
I don't think you're giving us our due credit. Our scientists have done things which nobody's ever done before.
Yeah, but your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could that they didn't stop to think if they should.
But back to what you were saying. I that whole scene, that entire scene actually really, I think the whole argument or premise for the movie is really summed up there. And one of the lines that I love, and I just, first of all, can we just say Ian Malcolm as a character and Jeff Goldblum playing him is just, he's just so superb in that part. But the line, and I like to repeat this if I ever can, but you know, the lack of humility before nature, it staggers me.
Yes. The way he says that. Yes.
But it's so true. And so like you're saying, like, I think we approach it, I mean, pick the subject, cloning all the way to abortion, gay marriage, I don't care what you pick. I mean, I think sometimes the lack of humility that we have, I don't care if you're left or right on any issue, the lack of humility that we have approaching these subjects is really where the problem comes in. I think you can be somebody that agrees with me, but if you approach an issue with that lack of humility and you think you are God in this subject, then you're not going to solve the problem. So let's go back to the gun control analogy, right? If you come in and you want to force your agenda down someone's throat because you think I'm going to play God in this scenario and I'm going to force you to do it, I don't think you're going to enact the change you want to see. So my whole thing is, I mean, I would say, like, I think relative to maybe our little, overthink community, I might be a little more moderate than most, but so I have way too many people, that I work with that are way more conservative than I am. And so I'm trying to get these people, I want these people to at least agree, or not agree, but acknowledge each other's opinions. And you're not going to do that without humility. You know what I mean? I think that's why I love how applicable that line could be to anything, but just the way he delivers it, man. I mean, it's just so essential.
No,
so
when you are playing with nature, especially this technology, you are playing in the realm of God, whether you think God is literal or figurative.
Sure, sure.
And either requires humility. I don't know. Have you done any research on CRISPR? Do you know what that is? Do you know what CRISPR is?
Yes. And I'll let you kind of dive into it too, or let like our listeners who don't know what it is. But yeah, that article that you sent me in terms of dealing with miscarriages was really eye-opening to me. But go ahead and let them know what that CRISPR is.
Yeah, there's an amazing, and there's a Radiolab podcast that's very well known. They were the first ones to bring it to the forefront of public knowledge. And when I listened to the podcast, I was rocked to my core, and I drove home and Laura was looking at me, my wife, and she says, "What's wrong?" And I looked at her and I said, "Humans just became gods and nobody knew it." She's like, what are you talking about? So this is going to be a butchered version of it because I am a layman, but essentially they found a protein in bacteria that had virus DNA in it. And when they couldn't figure out why, and they just basically found out there were these bacteria that had these little proteins and like shaped like little Pac-Man. And when they were attacked by a virus, these things would go in and snip out part of the DNA so that if they were ever attacked by that virus again, they would send these little Pac-Man out into the virus DNA, carrying some of the virus DNA with them, right, as like a guide. And they would search that DNA strand for the matching piece. Like they, like, you know what I mean? Like they're carrying it around going, okay, you know, RDLT or whatever our DNA is. I think it's just RAT, whatever. And they would find the same thing and they would snip it out of that virus when it attacks again and disable the virus. And they went, I wonder if we could do this in other things. So they took these little proteins called CRISPR and removed the DNA they were carrying around and put some other DNA in it. And they started putting it into organisms. And with like a 90-something% success rate, it would very quickly go through all the DNA and snip out the thing that it was told to snip out, like a little radio-controlled microscopic, beyond microscopic little pair of scissors. And then they went, well, now there's all these gaps in the DNA. I wonder what happens if we take the DNA that we want and we put it next to the hole. And they put it next to the hole. And what does DNA do? It has these enzymes and proteins and its own natural healing mechanism. If a scientist is listening to this, they're probably rolling their eyes at how I'm butchering the, the science. But basically the DNA, so you basically you can plug whatever DNA you want into those holes and you're done. And we have kind of the ability to do this before, but we didn't have the ability to do it with the accuracy, the speed, or the price. And that's the thing that's staggering, because it used to cost like $2,000 to do this with a 50% success rate. Now you have a 90% success rate and it costs like $20-$50 or something.
Goodness gracious.
And the ramifications of this are huge in multiple levels. One is when it comes to like diseases, right? So like you can go into a child that is forming an embryo and go like, you don't want it to have diabetes. You don't want it to have less risk of a cancer. Like, you know, certain diseases that you know are if you have certain DNA signatures or whatever that you're prone to, like they can address that. Also, if you do it to an embryo, that when that embryo grows up to a human, they will pass that on to their offspring. Meaning like if you were to do this to like the sperm in a sperm bank, right? Anybody or whatever, to a certain group of amount of people, over the generations, that DNA trait which you created will spread through the population. So if I were to do it to you now as an adult, it wouldn't affect your offspring. But if you're an embryo, then when you grew up. So we can now direct the course of evolution.
Yeah, that's – well, first of all, I'm just now, hoping – so when are mutants coming? I really want – when are the Homo superiors coming?
That is the thing. Now obviously – that is terrifying in the way that AI is terrifying, because it's this thing. What are the long-term ramifications? You know, what if we screw something up and we destroy our ability to survive higher temperatures? Now we get eradicated when, you know, global warming really, really kicks in the next couple of decades.
That's
all conjecture. That's all nonsense. I'm sure that's not the case, but like that's the general principle. But there is, you know, widespread curing of diseases is amazing. There are things, if I could choose for my daughter to have like 80% less chance of adult onset diabetes or whatever it is, I don't think that's a bad thing to choose necessarily. I mean, people go, oh, you're playing with God, but I don't want my kid to get a cold. I don't want my kid to get AIDS. I don't want my kid to get cancer. And that's a natural human reaction. So it's good and bad.
I think that's the line. That's the line that I think I struggle with when I was going through this. And where's the line? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, why? Because when you started out talking about is like you've gone over the, or humanity's gone over the line, basically being able to create a super race or manipulate things that beyond maybe what they need to be. But then you hear it all the time, you know, like in arguments, like what if that kid was going to grow up to cure cancer, or what if this person would, you know, if you would have given him the education he or she could have had, then he could have cured cancer. I mean, you hear it all the time, like curing cancer is the will be a monumental achievement when we do it. And I have the faith in humanity, at least, that it's a when, not an if kind of a thing. And we're talking about reproducing a woolly mammoth, so cancer is just going to be just give it time. But that's just, it's really fascinating. But yeah, where's the line there? And I don't know. Again, I have a hard time believing that we're capable of. I don't know. I err on the side of, you know what? Let's just let's not mess with it, because I don't trust people. I agree. What I mean? Like you had the Nazis. You know. Attempting to create a super race. I think I'm the first person to use Nazis as an example.
Well, they did. I mean, they experimented on people like by injecting them with motor oil and injecting the semen of animals into them and to terrible, terrible things. Now imagine if a regime like that were to rise up, because that's not happening at all in our country right now. Where things are looking a little bit more totalitarian. And they decide to, God, imagine if Richard Spencer got a hold of this. Like the question, like that's why you need to be having the questions now and talk about regulation so you keep it in smaller groups' hands. Now that just a smaller group of people doesn't necessarily mean that smaller group is as intelligent as they need to be and as moral as they need to be. But I do really believe that when it is regulated to smaller groups, it's easier to control, and you tend to have like the mass hysteria, because once you give somebody something, it's harder to get it back. I can't give you a $100 bill and then ask for it back, you get pissed. But if I never offer you a $100 bill, you don't even know you don't, you know, you don't really need it. I mean, everybody could use $100, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I totally know what you mean. I try to talk to a lot of people, a lot of my friends that are alarmists. Don't get me wrong. There were things I was concerned with, you know, when this new regime change just came in with Trump coming in, and there were certain things that people should be afraid of overturning, but there's some other things that I wasn't worried, because once you give somebody something, especially a right, it's really, I mean, we're seeing it with guns in America, for example,
yeah.
Like, as much as you want that, it's going to be really hard to take them away, because it's just been so instilled in us. Same with, why prohibition didn't work in this country. You know what I mean? It just, you know, because once you do it, once you give it to them and it becomes a part of life, it doesn't matter how, you know, it's very difficult. You rarely ever see a right ever, you know, get rescinded. And if it does, it's very temporary. Yeah. And then, yeah, humanity is always leaning towards progress. And again, even and in good and bad ways. So yeah, there's great ways I think we're improving. And then there's ways that, you know, I think it's, we're going to be cloning dinosaurs here, and then people are going to die at a theme park, and you know, and that's yeah. not good. So, you kind of brought it up. What I really like it too, is like, we're talking about regulation and really, I kind of want to bring like the government side into this. Something I ask all of my guests on here, it's one of my favorite hypotheticals, is what do you think, you know, what do you think the thesis of the film is? Do you agree or disagree with it? And my favorite part is, if you like the thesis, would you actually like to sit down with President Trump or any important members of Congress or anything, would you use this film to start a conversation? Like, this conversation I'm having with you, James, it's awesome. I think it's great. I've learned a lot.
Yeah.
I think I'm growing. Do you think that this is something you would like to do sitting with Trump? But first, let's talk about the thesis. Where do you think this movie falls in on the idea of science? And do you agree with it?
Yeah, totally. It's interesting because this dovetails into my interpretation of the movie, which is kind of science aside, but to me, the thesis of the movie is, you know, life finds a way. And for the central character, Alan Grant, it's from realizing that he needs to be open to children and thinking about the next generation. Now, I think that on a personal level, it's very much about him and his journey, but on a more universal level, I think that directly gets to the core of what we were talking about. It's about why and how it will affect a million years down the road, and that we now have the power to affect generations, and realizing that matters. And in that sense, the movie is really about, it's not just about you. This little contained incident on this island has ecological ramifications within the context of the movie, but just generational consequences. So to me, it's surprisingly nuanced, and because it's very, very easy to walk away from the movie going like, freaking scientists. But it really isn't. It's about about scientists controlled by, it's almost lambasting the entertainment industry, or I should say our culture is
definitely
our cultural. I'm always, people use entertainment like it's a dirty word. Let's say vacuous entertainment. People, we now have an obsession and an almost need for constant stimulation in terms of that type of entertainment, and that is really much more what the movie is condemning in a lot of ways. And science can definitely be a part of that. Science has been a part of that. This is an audio podcast, but I'm holding up my cell phone.
Yeah, right.
So like, I'm addicted to my phone like everybody else and struggle with it. That same technology essentially is also allowing us to do this podcast and have this communication.
Yes.
So it's about how you use it, and it's about, and again, like, it goes back to the quote from Jeff Goldblum's character earlier, Ian Malcolm, like it's about your reasons for doing it. So that said, I actually would not use this movie to start a conversation, because I think it's way too nuanced. I think it would have the effect of, like, it's already such an anti-science regime. Is regime the right word? I'm using aggressive terms.
I think that word is what you put into it. I feel like if I really liked the regime that that I was supporting, that's an exciting word for me. Like, I'm a part of this regime. So it's what you put into it. Yeah. But go ahead.
No, I mean, like, we have seen, like, and I'm not trying to offend any more conservative listeners, but there is sometimes a very aggressive anti-science stance that seems to come from the conservative side and the current presidential president. But then there's also, even from a lot of the constituents and a lot of people on that side, it's not, even if it's not aggressive, it's kind of dismissive. I don't need this. It doesn't matter. It's just talking in my ear. I've got to live life. When in fact, it does matter. It affects every part of our life. And I think that a movie like this is just could be perceived as just see more proof. If we ever clone a dinosaur, it's all going to go to hell, you know?
Sure. No, absolutely. Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah. No, I think you're totally. Yeah. No, I think that is actually a really good way of looking at it. Cause I was coming at it like, I think you convinced me, cause I was initially going to, like, I wouldn't want to show this to the president, maybe, because I don't think it would sink in. And I'm not saying that to insult him. I think there are a lot of people that really, they just watch this movie because the dinosaur sounds really cool.
Agreed.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's funny, because I think you're right that it's nuanced, but I also think the nuance is very subliminal. So if I really wanted him to consider my opinion on the ethics of cloning or the ethics of scientific advancement, this isn't maybe the best one to do it, just because I think it's very, you would be distracted.
Yeah.
As much as I would love to see his reaction, you know, when the car's falling down the tree or something, I'd love to see that. But anyway, I think that's what it would be. I just think I would lose him. I'd be like, hey, so after we watched that movie, what did you think about, you know, about cloning? He's like, yeah, no, I don't know. But did you see like those dinosaurs that were running, you know? Like squirrel over there, you know? but I like what you brought up about the thesis of the movie, because it is, you know, life will find a way. I think it's really fascinating. And that's what's cool too. I asked my wife. My wife and I usually don't have the same taste in movies. Which is really fun, because I end up seeing a lot of things I would never see. And I think same with her. But we both agree that Jurassic Park is one of the greatest movies ever. And I think it just comes to that core, life finds a way. Like you can pick any movie and it's all about survival. You just find this person you want them to survive and or succeed or something. And it does such a good job. But now this is something, I don't know, this blew my mind when someone brought it up to me, and I really wish I can remember what website brought this up, but you were talking about life finding a way. And have you heard about the seatbelt analogy in the movie? Have you heard about this, that happens in the movie at all? Or am I about to blow your mind?
The seatbelt. Well, I remember that, Alan Grant has the two wrong ends of the seatbelt, so he has to like makeshift. Yeah, but no, I haven't heard a theory about it.
So essentially, someone explained to me that explains the whole movie. So he has the seatbelts, and they're two female part seatbelts, by the way. So, you know, all the dinosaurs on Jurassic Park are female.
Oh, yeah.
So he has the two female ends of it, and what he ends up doing is he ends up finding a way, you know what I mean? So there's this challenge.
That's great.
And isn't that awesome? And so, yeah, so it's one of those things where I hope it's intentional, but I could see it not being. But, you know, the dinosaurs on the island ended up breeding, you know, they were all women. Yeah. I love BD Wong. I want to put BD Wong's great. And you were talking about how the scientists are kind of lambasted in this movie. He's kind of a bad guy in this one. He's really a bad guy in Jurassic World. But yeah, he says like, how do you expect an island full of female dinosaurs to breed, you know?
How do you know they're all female? Does somebody go out in the park and pull up the dinosaur skirts?
We control their chromosomes. It's really not that difficult. All vertebrate embryos are inherently female anyway. They just require an extra hormone given at the right developmental stage to make them male. We simply deny them that.
Deny them that?
John, the kind of control you're attempting is, it's not possible. Listen, if there's one thing the history of evolution has taught us, it's that life will not be contained. Life breaks free, it expands to new territories, and it crashes through barriers painfully, maybe even dangerously, but, there it is.
There it is.
You're implying that a group composed entirely of female animals will breed?
No, I'm simply saying that life, finds a way.
But yeah, I love when he says that. But that's what that analogy is. You know, you have these two female parts of a seatbelt, and they end up finding a way. So that kind of explains the whole thesis of the movie. So when you said that is the thesis, I'm like, that's exactly what I thought about. So I in no way take credit for that.
No, absolutely, kind of cool, man. Like I didn't even think about that. Like that's God, talk about that. Like a commentary on the transgendered issues that are going on in politics right now too. It's this idea of. Our world, we think that there's this perfect system for everything to work, right? And sometimes there is. You know, you water a tree, it grows, it eats sunlight, it lives and stuff like that. But life is more complicated than that. It really is. And this idea that it still works. Everyone was like, gay people cannot get married because it's different and all these bad things will happen. Well, gay people got married and are raising kids, and guess what? The kids are turning out great. Like, you know, maybe you should, and I'm not justifying those arguments at all, but now we've been through it, you know, and to me, that's Alan Grant. He tied the seatbelt. You know what I mean? It works. Does it look a little different? Is it not exactly how it was intended? It works. And nature and life have a way of doing that. they invent and they circumvent hurdles. It's amazing. The design of this universe is amazing. And anyway, like we can't put it in a box.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. No, life will find a way. And if you can do that, going back to that other point, if you can do that with sincere humility, then, and grace, I guess, which are things we're lacking, in our public sphere right now, is humility and grace. If you can do it that way, that we can make progress. Agreed. Sorry.
No, totally. You were talking about that scene with BD Wong where Alan Grant realizes he's holding a raptor. And all he does is look at BD Wong and goes, "You bred raptors?" And BD Wong, who is a phenomenal actor, like such an underrated actor, mm-hmm. he just looks up like a kid who just got caught doing the thing that's going to get him grounded for a month.
Yes.
And it's subtle because you watch that and you go, oh, he freaking knows. And he did it anyway. And that's how layered that movie is. It's in every performance, every moment is so true to the premise and so true to the theme. It's pretty great.
Yeah. I think I just can't get over watching it. I mean, I don't like saying this phrase a lot because I think it gets put around, but like it is a near perfect film, right? I mean, like, especially like you said, from the performances and everything, it just, and it really just like, if you want, you can just spend hours writing and thinking and podcasting about it. It's really good.
It's true.
But I really like this. I mean, again, too, like who knew we're going to sit here and talk about, Jurassic Park and then get into, you just brought up like transgender issues. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, you can allow it. So, something else before we go and jump into the shallow one, cause there's a lot of fun stuff I want to talk about this movie too. Is there a takeaway that you watch this movie and you really like it really, like you said, it was a very formative movie for you, but is there like a takeaway, or something that you take away and you would almost like go and you want to tell people about it? Like, man, when I watched Jurassic Park, it changed me. It doesn't even have to be about cloning or ethics or anything. It's just something about it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was about, I watched it again and I was trying to wrap my head around why. I mean, obviously the obvious reasons, I saw it when I was 12 years old. It's just going to have an impact on you just because of the cool factor. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of personal, but like what I realized was at the time when I saw it, my family was going through a really hard time and we actually lost our house and we had to go live in the woods. We had like a little piece of property we were bought. So we were essentially homeless living in tents for like a summer. And it was right when I had done my first pre-order from Suncoast Video on VHS. I had it on Letterboxd VHS, the copy of Jurassic Park, but no way to watch it because we were living in the woods. And it was like this talisman, man. I cannot describe how obsessed I was with this movie. So when I went back to revisit it, I was like, what is it? What is it? And I realized that movie is so small. Like within a few years, we had Independence Day and Armageddon and started this slew of movies that are about the destruction of the entire world. And now we've transitioned with the Marvel movies to the destruction of all reality. Like the last Guardians of the Galaxy movie was about like all of reality being destroyed, right?
Yeah.
Jurassic Park is about this little group of people learning how to work together on an island to get off. So to me, it was like, oh, it's so perfect. They're trying to get off the jungle back to civilization. That movie is about literal evolution. It is about the evolution of the human spirit. It's about the evolution of family. It is about that concept of learning how to change and be a better person through Alan Grant's character. And John Hammond realizing his mistakes. Like, I think to me, like that's the biggest takeaway for me is like that is how you survive and you can never stop. So in regards to like, say this podcast, right, this is why I adore your podcast, because it's about, I never would have looked at film through a political lens and it's forcing me to. And I realized I have to think about these things in a more direct way. I have to evolve because it matters to my daughter, right? It matters to her children and it matters to the people around me in real time now. And once I realized that about that movie and how the simple, silly little movie about running from dinosaurs has this primal universal impact into its very simple theme. Like that's what I would say is like, watch it again through that lens. And it's,
yes,
it is. I get excited at the end. I get so excited that they're going to go to the mainland and just as a character, Alan Grant is going to go off and try and be a better person.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yes. Like, and I don't know. I find that just deeply uplifting and encouraging that.
No, I think you and I kind of, it sounds like you and I approach movies in a lot of ways. I can always like, I wouldn't even say this is a dark movie, but yeah, there's usually there's some, almost every movie you can find a silver lining. And I agree. I walk away from this movie thoroughly entertained and very hopeful, which is great.
Yeah.
So I appreciate your feedback on that. The one last thing too, I want to bring up too, something I like to do is there anything that you see in the movie that's like an allegory that's taking place in today's like climate, cultural climate or something, like a scene in the movie, like, oh man, that reminds me of this or that. And maybe while you think about it, I'll give you a good example of what I think about. And it's really minor, but I don't know why it came up to me. Is like, you know, there this technology that Hammond is bringing out, like I think he's a good person. He sincerely is really trying to entertain people or bring joy to people in their lives that maybe didn't have joy. I mean, you're telling me about the struggles that you had when you were a kid, like this movie did that to you. You know what I mean? It brought you, you know, sincere joy while you were going through a really difficult time. So I see Hammond being that guy that really wants, and he wants it to be accessible to everybody. He wants it to be the rich and the poor kind of a thing. And
none of these attractions are ready yet, of course, but the park will open with the basic tour you're about to take. And then other rides will come online 6 or 12 months after that. Absolutely spectacular design, spared no expense.
And we can charge anything we want, $2,000 a day, $10,000 a day, and people will pay it. And then there's the merchandise. And I can personally...
Donald.
This park was not built to cater only for the super rich. Everyone in the world has the right to enjoy these animals.
Sure, they will. What, we'll have a coupon day or something.
And like really talk about his interpretation of, you know, why he's doing this. So I do think it's sincere, but it's just been manipulated in the wrong way. And that's really how, what I was thinking when I was watching that scene, I was thinking about like the internet and Twitter, because Twitter to me, something that the reason why I was drawn to it, and it's very simple technology when we're talking, comparing it to cloning, but like, you know, it's a great way for all these people that have a lot of influence to really reach out to the everyday person. You know what I mean? Like in principle, I like the idea that the president can go and tweet people and he can see what they're retweeting and he can go out and do that. And I think that like, that's really cool. I think like if there is a sincere positivity to whoever, you know, the people that really have made Twitter what it is, I think maybe that's what they were thinking. Like, I want to connect people. And Facebook is like, you and I know each other personally, so we have a Facebook friend. But Twitter, you can like follow the president, you can follow Elon Musk, you can follow these influential people, and there's a possibility you two are going to connect. You know, it makes the world feel very small. But then you see the president, you know, threatening nuclear war and belittling veterans and doing all these things on his Twitter account. Like, I don't think that's what the people that started Twitter were hoping it would do. You know what I mean? And so. I think that's those are just two of the things he's done on Twitter. So that's kind of, for me, when I saw this allegory. So I was just curious if you had anything similar to that.
Creation without taking responsibility for it, being a negligent parent almost. Yeah,
absolutely.
So, you know, no, that's a really good point. I'm not sure I have better. I would say this, and it was something I have not thought about, but as you were talking, it made me think of it. I firmly believe that our current political situation is directly related to the rise of reality television, which is not to say that I think you can't have reality television, but what happened so quickly to that genre of television, if you want to call it a genre, was that it normalized what should be aberrant or negative behavior.
True.
And all of a sudden, and yes, we're laughing at them, but they're bringing us joy. And then then we get that. There's an appetite. We get fed more and more and more. And now all of a sudden, people that shouldn't be seen as cultural touchstones or people of power in our culture suddenly have power.
Yes.
And you know, sometimes does it, so, but you know, the Kardashians may be vapid, but they just kind of lay there, don't do anything. Right. But then you have somebody like Trump who displayed a lot of negative behavior on television for a lot of years. And I think that all of a sudden well, that's the norm. Why shouldn't he try? Why shouldn't he go? But there is no scenario. There is no scenario where 100 years ago he'd get anywhere near office.
Oh, absolutely not.
So anyway, so like that is, and I'm not anti-conservative or anything. I was raised Republican. It has nothing to do with that. It just has to do with the expected quality of behavior for human beings, I think, is irrevocably altered because of that aspect of the entertainment industry, which I work in and revere. You know what I mean? So I'm not even being anti-entertainment industry. It's just, but I think it's a pretty cold, hard fact. There's a direct line that you can trace. So
yeah, no, I think that's a really great line. I hadn't really considered that one. So that's why I appreciate you bringing it up. And something too, I also appreciate you being apologetic and generous that you're not trying to be anti anything. But something that I want to say too, for anybody listening or anybody that's been on the podcast or planning on coming on the podcast, my whole thing with anybody, I don't care what your opinion is. You know what I mean? And there's no reason that I feel like you need to just own your opinions. You know what I mean? But then kind of what we're saying, but do it with grace and humility and you'll be fine. That's my whole thing. There's somebody here that if they disagree with me, I'd rather have a civil conversation. So yeah. So if anybody here thinks we're trying to offend anybody or we're trying to, that's not the idea. Right? It's to get, thought provoking conversations going on. So I appreciate the way that you're handling it anyway. So yeah, thanks. No problem. But also at the same time too, don't be afraid to agitate people too. There's just a way to do it. You know what I mean? There's a proper way to, there's always a proper way to do it. So I was talking about agitate. One of my favorite, historical figures is Frederick Douglass. A civil rights leader during the Civil War and post-Civil War era. And a young man, I saw this in a documentary where somebody asked him advice on like, what should I do, as I'm trying to advance my cause, And he says, well, agitate. And I like that. You know what I mean? There's something about that. You know what I mean? Never stop. Like there's people in power. But I like that too, because he didn't say, go punch them in the face and kick them until they agree with you. He's like, just agitate them to the point where maybe they'll see your point one day. So there's a grace to that, I would say. But anyway, so thanks for sharing that. I think we've been swimming around in the deep end for a while. My legs are getting really tired. So let's head on over to Shallow End and talk about like the fun stuff about this movie. And again, it's probably one of the most fun movies of all time too. Yeah. I have some shallow thoughts, and if you have any, you want to share them with me. But something that kind of popped up in my mind while I was watching this one, and it was hard to avoid. I'd like to know your opinion of the franchise as a whole, because Jurassic Park being one of the greatest films of all time, what do you think about, 2, 3, and then this new one coming up? Because I have some thoughts myself, but I would be really curious what you think about the state of the franchise.
The state of the franchise. They're not great. I actually really enjoy the third one. I think the third one is kind of this, it's like a Looney Tunes cartoon. If you actually watch, and I think Joe... Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, was it Joe Dante? No, Joe Johnson directed the third one, who was kind of a protege. He was under the tutelage of Spielberg, and the third one was written by the writing team that wrote Election. And
That's disappointing.
It's well, if you look at it, man, there's a lot of that weird satirical counterculture kind of humor in it, which is not the place for a Jurassic Park movie. But it's they also they rewrote that script on the fly as they were shooting. It was a disaster. But like lots of times when the dinosaurs attack, he speeds it up like a cartoon. He like overcranks it's really or undercranks it. It's really weird. And I kind of love it for that. Love is a strong word. I enjoy it for that reason. The Lost World is one of Spielberg's absolute worst movies. Absolute worst.
On his scale.
Well, no, it's bad. I mean, like The Lost World is, there is no plot. The whole middle of that movie, they're just wandering around. You know what I mean? Like, and then randomly bad guys come to attack dinosaurs, and then they get off and it also has a dour. He had made his shift post Schindler's List. And if you actually look at, he switched cinematographers, and his films took a much kind of darker, literally a darker kind of color palette and darker in tone. And so it was weird to go back and revisit this joyous movie with a sequel that just has it's grosser. It's meaner. Like he does a jump. He does a smash cut from a little girl getting attacked, an innocent little girl getting attacked, to a joke about Ian Malcolm yawning over the sounds of her screams.
Yeah, I remember that now. Yeah.
And it's like a clever cut, but it's like, what are you trying to say about a little girl getting killed? It was weird. So like, I know I think that franchise took a definite, just a shocking, given the, especially given the quality of the first one, a huge downturn. And I thought Jurassic, but anyway, whatever. I'm sitting here. I don't mean to rag so hard. I mean, like, whatever. Spielberg has a bad movie. Jesus, he gave us a thousand brilliant ones.
Exactly. We all anyway, have
yeah, no, I haven't really. I felt like they kind of lost the spirit. There's a shot that I think personifies the new one, Jurassic World. And they do this epic tracking shot, but it's through a hotel room, and the kid throws open the hotel room doors, and the camera shoots out overlooking the food court, essentially. And
there's
a big pool of water, and I remember going, "Oh, a dinosaur is going to leap out!" There's not a dinosaur in the shot, and I went, "Are they trying to comment on our obsession with the theme park entertainment aspect of it?" And if so, I'm not sure I'm getting the joke, or if they sold the joke. And then I went, "Oh my God, did they really just so miss the point that they think the idea of the theme park is the coolest part of Jurassic Park? The coolest part of Jurassic Park is Jurassic. Like, the park is just the way to get there." And I don't know. I would love to talk to those filmmakers, but I remember at that moment just kind of getting this feeling in my stomach of like, "Oh, I think they missed the mark." Now, financially, they did not miss the mark. Financially, that movie broke the bank.
Financially,
but,
it did not.
But
no.
Yeah.
There are dinosaurs on your dinosaur tour.
Yeah, exactly. There are dinosaurs in your food court, right?
I really hate that man. Anyway,
That said, let me just backtrack and say all of those films, including the sequel that Spielberg directed, were in the shadow of greatness, and I don't know how you top it. So they had big shoes to fill for sure. What are your thoughts?
So it's funny. I don't know. So the first one, amazing. I mean, it was best film ever. I remember, so I saw Lost World in the theater, and I was, when would that have come out?
It came out like 90. I think you're right.
So yeah. I was 10 and I thought it was the coolest thing ever. You know what I mean? And so, and I didn't see it again until like college. And so I went from like, there was a decade in my life that The Lost World was one of the coolest movies of all time. You know what I mean? And so I go watch it again, and I still, there's a lot to it, you know, that I do enjoy, the scale and everything. So I think I like that one. The third one, I remember it just being like,
it's very silly. Third one's very silly.
Very silly. And it feels like it's 20 minutes long too. Which there are worse cinema sins to commit, than being too short of a film, especially if it's bad. But I like Jurassic World. I do. I won't say I love it. I won't say by any means, cause there's so much wrong with that movie. But like I say this to my friend too, like I mean, I'm going to put this out there, and I'm really sorry that I have to admit this, but like, I'll rewatch the Star Wars prequels too. You know what I mean? Like, they're not my favorite. They're awful, but I like being in Star Wars world. I like my brain being in the Star Wars world and being there. And even if it's a garbage movie, because they're garbage, I like my head being there. So just part of me is like, oh man, I just want my head to be in the Jurassic Park world, in a world where dinosaurs exist. I want my head there right now. And there's enough of it, entertainment value in that movie for me to like it. Now, I mean, is it flawed? Absolutely. But yeah, no, but I'm excited about the next one too. I know it's coming out, I think, in a couple of years. I mean, I'm excited for it. You know what I mean? I don't know. So, but yeah, no, to say that there is, to say they're anywhere is good. Yeah. It's just not, it's almost not fair, but yeah, I mean, I was shocked how much money that it made.
Yeah.
And I think everybody was. And then to see like, Independence Day, the second one come out, and it like tank was very much like, I thought like, oh, this is just going to be the thing. We're just going to take 90s films. Because our generation has money now, so we can put money in. This is what they're just going to keep doing. You know what I mean? And I think Hollywood, they bit the dust on that one. But that was just an objectively garbage. That was a worse sequel than Jurassic World was. So
I didn't make it all the way through that one. But yeah, no, I think it definitely rides the power of that first wave. But I don't mean to diminish it like that. There's some cool scenes in it as well. But it's also we've seen other really cool space movies since Independence Day. We haven't seen any cool dinosaur movies since Jurassic Park. So it's, I know, and I agree, just being around dinos and all of those sequels have cool moments. Like as much as I ragged on The Lost World, man, it's got that scene with the raptors in the grass sneaking in on it. It's one of the best scenes that Spielberg has done, you know? So definitely has those moments. And the scene where the, the trailers are getting pushed over the cliff is also incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Oh no, I thought that was really cool. Like logistically, that whole thing. Yeah, too. I love it. And something else too, I want to talk about this film too. I think something that I really like about it is the casting. I mean, there are no huge stars in this film. You know what I mean? I mean, BD Wong deserves to be one of them, but Jeff Goldblum at the time, I think, was just, you know, like he was known, you know, and Sam Neill was known, and Laura Dern, I think, has had a really great, you know, renaissance coming up. I think she's had a really good career lately. I plug for Big Little Lies. If you haven't seen it, go see it. It was very moving, but I love that they're, cause I think originally Sam Neill's character was supposed to be played by Harrison Ford, I think is what I'd read.
Oh,
originally.
Wow.
And I think that would have detracted from this movie as, I think for multiple reasons. And you might, you know, like it was too close to Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm.
He was very much an Indiana Jones character. And two, it would have been a Harrison Ford in Jurassic Park, not like Jurassic Park.
Well, exactly. And it's about an everyman learning to become a dad. And then if it was Harrison Ford, you'd be like, he's going to have sex with every single person on this island.
Yes. Some dinosaurs.
Yeah, some dinosaurs, right? Like, because he has that appeal.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's true. It's true. It would have been weird. And well, and Sam Neill was, you know, is not super well known in the States, but is a very, very well respected actor from Australia. He's Australian?
I believe British. So, yeah.
And I think he's Australian.
Also on the short list to be a Bond as well. He was on the short list. That's two episodes in a row.
Is he really?
I'm going to bring up James Bond in all of these podcasts. I'm going to find a way.
The fact that Spielberg always wanted to do a Bond movie. Yeah, never did.
Yeah. I think they all, and so did Nolan. They all do. So did Cameron. And then that's funny because that's Cameron wanted to, so he does True Lies. Spielberg wants to, so he does Indiana Jones. And if you watch the Chris Nolan films, like, Bruce Wayne is James Bond, man. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I love the idea of all these frustrated directors that can't make James Bond that go and make great movies. You know?
Right? It's
awesome. So, but yeah, I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think of any other shallow observations. But is there anything that you want to bring up that in terms of that? Just something that completely devoid of politics. You know?
No, totally. No. The dialogue in that movie is so good. When I was a kid, I had every line of the movie memorized from beginning to end. I could quote the entire movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's, I think that humor in the modern blockbuster, there's a lot of humor, but I see the humor being of very much of an ilk, where it's just kind of like, we're in a serious situation. Here's an irreverent joke. I love Guardians of the Galaxy, but like, especially that sequel is very much of that vein. Like, there's a whole joke about how a raccoon can't wink with a certain eye. And it's like, it's clever and it's really funny. Like, I really enjoyed it, but it's like, does this have anything to do with anything? Where if you watch Jurassic Park, all the humor is just milked out of that character. This character would say that in this situation, and it's characters sparking off of each other in a way, but then all the jokes are like true to the theme.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah,
like, it's so right. Yeah. Like just the dialogue play in that movie.
Oh man. You're so right.
So good.
You're so right. Like, okay, so some of my favorite movies out there, favorite shows that you wouldn't in any way call them a comedy, but I'm laughing through the whole one. So Jurassic Park, I mean, like, I'm sitting here laughing right now because I'm thinking of, like, you know, when you gotta go, you gotta go, you know? Or
what else do you say in that situation?
Yeah, totally.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
And I think about the line where he's like, but John, when Pirates of the Caribbean break down, the pirates don't eat the tourists, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
I there's a part of me that thinks that, like, in a modern blockbuster, you just cut to that character going, you know what I mean? Like, rolling your eyes, like, what an idiot, a more generic term. But it's like, that character would say that because it's intelligent. There's a logic behind it. It's a great reference. It's, you know, no, it's that. It's rare that you see a movie firing on all cylinders like that. And for as much of a genius as Spielberg is, and as much as he makes far more movies that I adore than I don't like, this silly little movie about dinosaurs is at the top of the heap. I mean, it really is up there with Close Encounters and E.T. and Jaws.
Yeah, yeah.
It really is, yeah.
He gets in the Jeep, and I've decided not to endorse your park. Like, you know, if that was me, I'd be like, just get me the F off this island. Like, I don't have time for a joke, but like, just the way
it's like the first joke that he makes, because usually all the jokes go to Ian Malcolm.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so good, man.
Yeah, oh, man. Totally.
So no, but no, you're right. And because it makes me think, I've been rewatching for seventh time. I've been rewatching The West Wing, you know, and it's my favorite show of all time.
Oh, wow.
And I'm watching it, but I'm laughing, and it's not a comedy in any way, yeah. But it's funny, you know what I mean? And I, same thing, I watched The Social Network. I'm like, why am I laughing? This is a dark film, but
yeah.
You know, anyway, so this, but your Jurassic Park, it's true. Like, I mean, you could say it's an action comedy. You know, and you're not taking away from the quality of the film.
So. That's the thing. It doesn't feel like the humor was layered over the top to make it more palatable or just to make it more entertaining. It's infused into the spirit of the movie. And it's that adventurous Amblin thing where it has pathos to it. It has stakes. It you know what I mean? A dude gets ripped off a toilet and shaken to death by a T-Rex. I mean, like, it ain't, you know what I mean? Like, you feel it. That movie gives you chills.
Yeah, it does.
But,
oh, man.
But it has, it's kind of one of, it's to me, it's like truly a roller coaster ride, but also really, really contained.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Like, I mean, literally, because they're all trapped on an island, but like, there's a whole action scene based around, oh no, that raptor's going to bite your leg.
Yeah.
As opposed to, oh no, this laser beam is going to blow up the core of the Earth. And I love those movies too. I'm not against them, but it's
for sure. Yeah. Well, you said contained. I mean, Malcolm says life cannot be contained. Life finds
a way. Yeah. Yeah.
There you go. Perfect.
There you go.
So my last question before we wrap things up here too, is just, we've been talking a lot about Spielberg and I really want to know, besides this film, like, you know, favorite, do you have a favorite Spielberg film? You know, he's just such a great, amazing director.
My collections right here. What do I own? Minority Report, Indiana Jones, Empire of the Sun, Always. I'd actually think Always is a really maligned film. Always and Hook were kind of like considered two of his worst films, but I actually think they're great.
No, Hook is good. I'll apologize for that one.
I mean, it's overdose on schmaltz, but man, the craft is there. But that, given that the anniversary is out and I just rewatched it in the theater and I own multiple versions of it, I think Close Encounters is his, even if it wins by a nose, that's his masterpiece because it has the extreme mastery of genre and craft that Jaws does, but God, is it a personal film?
Yeah.
It's a powerful movie. What about you?
You know what? This one, I can't explain it. So maybe someone else can psychoanalyze me and explain it. Munich, man. I watch Munich all the time. I watch Munich all the time. Yeah. I think it's just something about it.
I fell asleep in the theater. Watching.
Wow.
It makes sense given you were talking about, I think you said Lincoln is, was it you that said Lincoln's one of your favorite movies? Did you
actually, it's funny now that you say that. Lincoln is probably my favorite film of Spielberg's, but like for some reason I kind of want to say Munich just to be like ornery, but before Lincoln came out, like I think it is because I can explain to you why I like Lincoln. I can explain to you why Lincoln is the greatest film of all time and you can't dispute it. But like I can't with Munich, and that fascinates me. You know what I mean? I love the film. So I think that's partly why. But no, I think I mentioned it maybe offline that Lincoln is just it's stellar. I'm gonna watch it when we get off. Now that you brought it up, I got it.
That's amazing. I have never seen it. I do not. His kind of post Saving Private Ryan AI years, I haven't kept up with him as much. Something about his films haven't clicked with me in the same way, but I do need to, just for that performance alone. And I need to rewatch Munich because a lot of people that I respect really talk about the value of those movies. I think because I didn't react to them the way I reacted to his earlier stuff, that as the super Spielberg fan that of course everybody our age is, cause we grew up with his movies. I think it made me shy away and go like, I'm not sure I want to see him go this route.
Sure.
But I will definitely check those out.
I think what I would say about Munich and Lincoln, and which is why it's fair, and maybe even Hook, for example, like, have you ever seen a movie and you almost feel like the director made the movie for you? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Jurassic Park is a great film, but it's literally made almost for anybody. I don't know anybody that doesn't like Jurassic Park. You know what I mean? And so I watch Munich and I watch Lincoln, and he's like specifically taking the things that get me emotional.
Yeah.
And he's playing to them. You know what I mean? And so took a lot in my childhood, but like Lincoln to me, like it's hard for me to love America more than I already do. So if you know that, you know that that's like genuinely sincere. Yeah. And then he makes me just like, he just gets me excited to be, he makes me proud to be an American in a way that, that you should be, and not in the ways we
yeah,
should
yeah,
be.
Yeah.
And Munich to me, the violence is unavoidable. And I'm sorry if people have a hard time understanding that, but violence is unavoidable. People disagreeing with each other and only being able to resort to violence we're never going to get rid of it. And that is such a horrible, horrific thing that we have to tackle on a daily basis. And people want to pretend it's not real, but it is. And Munich does that to me. Munich really shows that, man, like even if we're fighting for the most human thing, like we're fighting for respect, we're fighting for revenge for these people that are dead that we loved. You know what I mean? Like there's something pure in that. But for some reason, we have to resort to violence to get the point across. And it's just wow. And then Spielberg treats it with such respect. And I'm not going to bed, man. I'm gonna have to watch Munich and Lincoln back to back.
You really have made me think about that, because when I saw Munich, I was much more of a pacifist in my beliefs, and I still have those kind of tendencies. Sure. The ideal, because I mean, like, let's face it, that's the best case scenario. The problem is that everybody's got to sign onto it.
No, exactly. That's the problem.
Summed up the problem of humanity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I like that you say that, because my mom is also a pacifist. She's a pretty strict pacifist, and she talks about it all the time. But she raised a soldier. I grew up and joined the army. You know what I mean? And she says that. But she always says something like, you know, I'm proud that there's people out there that do what you do, so I can go do what I do. And so by all means, I respect the pacifist in every way. But it's almost one of those things. It's undeniable. I mean, I would love it if, like you said, I would love it if everybody agreed with you. But for those that don't, I'm happy to stand in the way. So you could be a pacifist.
My wife said something when we were dating that was like so profound. It was actually one of the things where I was like, oh, that's who I'm going to marry. And she was talking about it in a religious sense, but I think it's beyond that. But she talked about being on her college campus and she'd been raised one religion and was thinking about joining another and was having these, you know, these deep internal struggles. And she was standing on campus and she just stopped in the middle of the campus and watched all of these people going to class of all shapes and sizes and beliefs and all of this. And she just went like, she just looked at that mass of people and she went, oh, that's God. You know what I mean? Like, not that she didn't think God was a, you know, separate entity or anything, but like, we are all made in God's image. And that means it takes all of us to even begin to get a picture of what God is. And that was thinking specifically about God, but I think that the truth of how we're supposed to live as humans is directly connected to that. And you need all beliefs. That does not mean that I condone violent actions or bigotry or anything like that. I do not think that white supremacists should be given a voice and they should be explained to why. And I think there needs to be regulation for sure. Yeah. Not just like throw rocks at them or something, but be like, you know, anyway, get counseling. But anyway, but all of that to say, like the fact, I think that your mom needs to believe that, and you need to believe that, and you need to have the dialogue about it, because I don't think that you're necessarily wrong, but I think the truth can never be contained in one person. It's somewhere in between us and our beliefs. Absolutely. And like, people have to believe those different things to pull the culture, you know, one way or the other, because if the truth is in the center, you've got to constantly kind of be balancing around it to get as close to the truth as you can. Yeah. Sorry. That's a weird way to put it. Awesome, anyway, but I think that's,
No. It's beautiful, man. No, that's awesome. This is what, for to me, and every time I have somebody on here, I just keep getting blown away more and more. But this is what I wanted. This is a dream come true, like, to have these conversations. And like, it literally started from Jurassic Park, and we ended up having this really great conversation. And that's what this podcast is, man. So I want to thank everybody thank you, James, for coming on, and everybody listening. I mean, this is what it's all about to me. Like, you can just take a fun film like Jurassic Park and find a way to connect to people and find a way to love people more, to just resist all that bull crap out there that says that we're different. Like, don't look at that different, resist that. And let's talk about what, maybe what can unite us. And I think Jurassic Park is one of the most uniting things out there. Yeah, we did it, man. So before you go, go ahead and just plug yourself, your social media. Where can people find you?
Totally.
You have good work out there, man.
You can find me on Twitter, at Dalmatian Jaws is my name. You can check out, I made a TV show, me and a buttload of really talented people made a TV show called Blood Drive that just aired its first season on the Sci-Fi Channel. And you can check that out on iTunes and stuff. And that's it. That's about all you need to know about what I do in my day job.
Awesome, James. Yeah. I can't thank you enough for coming on here. You contributed greatly. I also, again, check out his other podcast as well. Oh, yeah. The Close Up. There's some really, really good stuff on there. And there's just a lot of great other great podcasts on the Overthink Network. There's a lot of really great people here that are doing what they can to just like really share their passions. And we really want you to join the community as well. So please email us. We check the email at overthinkpod@gmail.com. Whether it be about Overthink in general or about this podcast, please throw out ideas. We have questions about past episodes, suggestions for future episodes. Like I said, I'm really going to have to watch Lincoln in Munich soon. So if you want me to tackle those, bring it up. But we have some really cool shows coming up in the future, some really deep subjects I want to cover, and I want to do that through the lens of cinema. So thanks again for joining us, everybody, and keep resisting.
Thanks, Chad.